Hi, this is Randy Eccles, and you're listening to NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS. This is Community Voices, and we are joined by Gus Gordon, the director of the Hoagland Center of the Arts. How are you today, Gus?
Randy, I am doing fine, sir, as well as can be expected during a worldwide pandemic.
Yeah, we're all figuring out what that means now.
Every day is a little different. Some days it's like business as usual. Other days, you know, there's a stress level that wasn't there in years past, but, you know, we're all making the most of it. I've been very fortunate that in many ways, this hasn't been a huge imposition on me personally, because my wife and I and our son like to stay at home for the most part anyways. I really am sympathetic though with the people who are, I'm a social person, but I know people who are really social and they're suffering right now just because they don't have that interaction. I'm okay with a book every now and then, but I do need to meet people, and I've had the chance to do that through my work in a safe way. All things considered, pretty good. There are people out there who are dealing with far worse things than I've been fortunate enough with this particular situation.
Have you had a go-to way of dealing with the isolation when it gets to you?
Well, you know, my wife and I started walking every morning. And so to get out in the sunshine without a mask in the daylight has been beautiful. It's not so great outside right now, but earlier throughout the spring and summer, we had beautiful weather for the most part. We didn't have some of those days that were so terribly hot and humid. We had a really temperate summer. We took full advantage of that. And that's good for the soul. That's good for the psyche. It's good for your health and well-being. And just to be outside and getting some vitamin D naturally is always a good thing.
These tactics that people are using are important, as a lot of psychologists have just come out and saying that they're recognizing now that it's starting to ramp up to a new level of taking a toll on people.
It is. And, you know, I'm not looking forward to the next couple of weeks, you know, listening to what the local reports are and the nationwide reports. It's worrisome. And we're all suffering from fatigue right now. In a normal situation, we would have been out of the dilemma for a long time by this point, but now we've had a little bit of freedom, and it looks as if we're going to be, you know, having a little less freedom coming up. So that is going to be very difficult for people. And I mourn for the people, the kids who are missing so many wonderful life-altering moments. That's been one of the hardest spots. My wife and I frequently comment to one another. Our kids are both, we have a son who's living with us and then a daughter who lives in Chicago, and both of them are college age students. And we're very fortunate. And we look at our friends with young kids and just have so much empathy and can't even imagine what folks are trying to do. A lot of teacher friends who are trying to make it all work and take care of their own kids and take care of everyone else's kids at the same time. It's tough. It is tough. One of the ways people get through moments like these are the arts. We have had the ability to share some artistic endeavors, and I've talked with several people who say, I wouldn't be getting through this without Netflix or Hulu or Disney Plus or any of the normal broadcasting channels. People are turning to entertainment to distract, to encourage, to find something for the soul to help us have the strength to go forward. And so the arts are so important. And I know when this is all said and done, people are going to be desperate for something, activities to do, to get out of the house, to be around other people. And my sincere goal throughout this whole process has been, I want to do everything within my power to ensure that the Hoagland Center for the Arts is still around, so they do have a place to go when this is all said and done. And that, of course, is a challenge in the middle of a situation like this.
Well, you alluded to it. We're potentially at another stay-at-home order in different parts of Illinois.
Right.
How did that impact the Hoagland, the first one, and how is it continuing to impact the organization?
Initially, we didn't know what was going on. We didn't know what this disease was. We didn't know how contagious it was. We didn't know exactly how you got it or how to protect yourself. So when the stay-at-order came, we shut down completely. I'd be very nervous to drive downtown once a week to check on the building, to run water through the taps, things like that, thinking that this COVID would jump out of the bushes or something. Now I think we have a better understanding of the situation. And I think many of us are a little more, or have become a little more confident in going outside with the proper precautions. And I've been really diligent personally of masking and keeping my distance. There are a couple of times, I will admit, that I have forgotten in the heat of the moment and wanted to say hi to someone. And then I forget, you know, that I didn't have my mask on and apologize profusely and quickly put it on. But we closed down the building. We were closed for a good solid 2 months, 2.5 months. We were closed for the latter half of March, all of April, all of May. We peeked out of the house in late May to see what was going on with the world. And then, of course, the world blew up in other ways. Horrible, you know, situations we've been dealing with relation, race relations and so forth. It's just been such a unique time. Certainly, I would think you and I could agree on this. We're probably in a similar age bracket. I've never seen anything like this. The thing that I think might be most comparable or comparable is the late 60s and all the civil unrest that took place at that time. But then you add a pandemic on top of that. And it's just a very uneasy time. So a lot of people are feeling stress. A lot of people, you know, need to find an outlet to deal with that. We were able to reopen a little bit in June. We allowed some of our arts groups, the resident organizations that call the Hoagland Home, back into the building. We had precautions that everyone had to agree to adhere to, and they have been doing a wonderful job. So the ballet company has been meeting with rehearsals, and the young ladies in the ballet company are wearing masks and they're 6 feet apart. We've had the Illinois Symphony Youth Orchestras start meeting again, and they went through a rigorous way of figuring out how to do that safely. Because, you know, just on the surface, you think, well, blowing into a trombone, that is not going to be safe. But they all have protection on the instruments, and they've really been diligent. They take temperatures when people walk in the building. We haven't had, knock wood, any cases in the building. And again, knock wood, because that could change at a moment's notice. We're all just, you know, I liken this to a jack in the box. And we've all got this jack in the box and we're turning the crank on it. And we know that clown's going to pop out at any time, but we don't know exactly when. And that kind of stress, I think we're all dealing with that right now. But having some artistic outlet has been very helpful to many of these groups. I had a conversation with Jackie Mitra with the youth symphonies, youth orchestras. And she was saying she had a student who came up to her and said, you know, this has been my favorite part since March. This has been my favorite thing that's happened since March. They get back, they have a little connection with other people. They have the music that's in their lives that's so important. Again, doing it in a safe way, in a socially distant way, that's kind of the key to making it happen. We did a production recently of Dracula, radio theater production. We thought, what could be socially distanced? What kind of play could be socially distanced? And we thought, well, doing a radio readers theater version with everyone 7 feet apart at different microphones would probably be as close as we could come to. And we recorded that this past Monday, and it'll be broadcast Thursday night, Friday night, the 30th, and then Saturday, October 31st. We'll be streaming it through a group called ShowTix4U, which is a streaming ticketing service so people can buy a ticket online and then watch the show. But several of the actors have written me personally and said, Gus, you know, just the chance to connect again, even if it was during a Zoom rehearsal, has been so important. And I think many of us who have had those opportunities really latch onto that it, you know, you don't realize how lonely you've been or how isolated you've been until you get a taste of what we used to have in the past.
You had another virtual production that you did recently, right? Are people buying tickets to watch something on YouTube?
Yeah. Well, that was a really big question for us. We didn't know if people would do that. There's so much content that's free online. And so we didn't know if people would buy a ticket to see a locally produced show. And we did a musical, very small musical, again, socially distanced. The actors wore their mask for a better portion of the event. When they weren't wearing their mask, they were on stage singing a solo or very far apart. It did very well. It did better than our projections. The service worked great. There were a few glitches more on our end trying to figure out a new ticketing system. But in practice, for most people, they were able to buy their ticket. They were sent an email with a link. It was unique to them, so they couldn't share it with 50 people. So they would click on the link about 10 minutes before showtime, and then they'd see a countdown, and then the show would start. Technically, it went very, very well. Artistically, it was great. And we had Jeremy Gechner, who's just a wonderful guy. He has a company called Gecko Media. He did the video aspect for us and did a masterful job. You know, this is all locally produced. We're not, with the exception of Jeremy, who has his side business, he has another job that he does 9 to 5. We're all amateurs at this and we're having to learn the technology, but it went really well. And that encouraged us to try another couple of things. We're doing Dracula now. We are planning on doing a dual piano Christmas show. So we'll have two grand pianos on stage, Mark Gifford and Damian Kaplan seated 9 feet apart playing piano. There won't be an audience in the building, but the audience can watch it at home. And I think people are kind of discovering they like seeing people they know. They like seeing local people. It's one thing to watch Hamilton on Disney Plus, which was great, but it's also fun to see your neighbors doing their thing. The Theater Center, Springfield Theater Center, one of our resident groups, they put on a show called The Spirit of Lincoln. That will be streaming in November. So there's people who are taking a chance with this new technology and new ways to share artistic material. I think we're going to see some of these kinds of things continue into the future. I think one of the cool things with this streaming service, the ShowTix, they have a deal with a company called Music Theater International. And Music Theater International holds the rights to many of the big musicals that people love to go see. After the pandemic, they're going to allow streaming shows to continue. So if grandmom and granddad live in Florida and they can't fly back to see their grandchildren in a show, they can buy a ticket online to watch a production. This is great in so many ways. It's going to build audience. It's the first truly new revenue stream we've seen in years. How do you reinvent, you know, the theater? It's very difficult to do, but this will allow us to expand our audience theoretically. The tech, as we're talking on Zoom and things like that, things that seemed overwhelming to many of us, especially many of a certain age like me, have become commonplace and so easy, and they're not quite as scary as we might have thought they would have been, and quite as hard to do as we thought they might have been. It's opened up a lot of new worlds that I think will continue after the fact. The shows are very interesting, and better to be doing something and staying relevant than to just lock down the building and hope for the best a year from now.
Well, artists will find a way. It just took a little while to look at the situation. And I know a lot of musicians who are frustrated that they can't get out and play, and they've done some of this.
Sure.
And it's really good to see this starting to happen. One thing I need to follow up on, and that is when this is over and that period seems to keep extending further into the future, that the Hoagland is there for everybody. What is the health right now because of this? How are you guys doing?
Well, you know, in March, it was very bleak because, I mean, just common sense told me that we weren't going to get out of this quickly. You know, I mean, you hope, and we didn't cancel the whole season right away. We'd cancel through March. Then we canceled through April. Then we canceled through May. I wasn't about to say this is hopeless because no one knows. But at the same time, I thought, well, if this is as bad as they say it is, it's not going to go away quickly. And but having said that, it looked pretty bleak in March because we make money 6 different ways. We sell tickets, we have tuition for classes, We have rentals from people who want to come in and do an event. We have rentals from the resident groups too. We have donations, we have sponsorships and advertisers, and we have grants. And truthfully, I had never been that much of a grant writer. I'd done a few small grants with like the Community Foundation or with the Springfield Area Arts Council, but never a huge grant. So I've had to learn how to do that. And this has forced me, and like a lot of people, I'm sure, out of my comfort zone, learning new skills and writing grants. I now consider I'm maybe not the best, but I've been fairly successful in finding things. So at first we thought, we're losing all of our sources of income. How on earth are we going? You know, it's tight in a good year. Running an 80,000 square foot, 100-year-old building with 20 different resident organizations with electricity bills that can be over $13,000 a month in the summer, that's overwhelming. But expenses went way down when we had to close the building. We were very, very conscious about turning off all the lights, not running the air conditioner when we didn't have to. We've been very frugal. If people are donating money to us, we're not going to blow it. We're going to do it responsibly. Randy, one of the things that really touched me was the public came forward. Even without us asking, we started receiving checks from some of our friends, some of our donors, who said, hey, I know these things are tough. I know it has to be tough on you right now. I hope this will help. And that was kind of overwhelming. And, you know, I get choked up thinking about it, that people really care. The arts are so important to so many people that they want to see it continue. And that has been how things have gone on. We were a part of something early on, Brian Reeves with the University of Illinois Springfield Performing Arts Center. He organized a big performing arts fundraising event where all the groups kind of got together and put out an appeal. It was neat to see all these groups come together and do a mutual ask. And Brian and I worked together on writing the copy and putting some things together, formed a nice friendship for us. And, you know, we worked together and we've had another couple of fundraising events. We had our gala this past weekend and we were kind of stymied on how to do that. We weren't going to sell a ticket to that necessarily. So we sent out an invitation asking people to write a check, kind of a no gala concept where you can write the check, but you don't have to dress up and go out. But then on the other side, we had a streaming event that we put on YouTube and Facebook for free. We contacted about a dozen Broadway performers. They would send us a tape just like people are doing right now, where they would be on Zoom and they would sing a song with a recording. They sent it to us. We edited it all together. And that's been very successful in raising money. It maybe is not as successful as our old-fashioned gala with a sit-down dinner and a silent auction might have been. It was very successful under the circumstances. So, you know, we're trying to come up with ways to reach out to the public without causing donor fatigue and just staying relevant, staying in the public's mind that we're still here and people are going to want to see a concert when this is done. People are going to want to go back out and see Peter Pan or whatever. They want to go back to the movie theater so bad, but there's no, I know that the movie theaters have been opening to some extent, but there's no new product out there right now. And that's going to take a while to come back. And while people are waiting for these movies that have been in limbo to be finished, we can put together a show a lot quicker than perhaps a movie studio can put together a movie. So I think we'll be filling a void there with some concerts. I had a lot of events planned for this year, concerts. All of them have been postponed till at least summer of 2021. I'm thinking probably fall of 2021 is more likely. The agents have been great to work with. I am so sympathetic to them that I've not said to one of them, hey, I want my money back. I've said, you guys need it right now. Usually when you hire someone, you hire them with a deposit and then you pay them the remainder of the money when they do the concert. But right now we just said, let's postpone this till next year. We'll get it in. But the artists, oh my gosh, the professional artists nationwide are suffering so much. Disney World just laid off 700 equity actors who do all their shows there. the Lion King show, Finding Nemo the musical, the Hoop-Dee-Doo review. Heartbreaking. These people, many of them have been working for Disney for 40 years. And now they've been furloughed since March. Now they've gotten their pink slips. It's heartbreaking. Many of them will not come back. Many of them will say, I've got to get a job, you know, somewhere else doing something else to pay the bills. Orlando's an expensive place. But it's not just Orlando. It's all over the country and all over the world. And I worry for many of my artist friends who are going to have to find other lines of work.
So. Well, thank goodness, like you said, for the donors who are showing their appreciation still. They're amazing and they understand how important these arts are. And if you look at the Hoagland, just look around your facility, what that's done as it's generated extra business in the area from William right. Vans and Ovid and Isaacs, and they redid the plaza for the realtors. I mean, you've been a catalyst there, and that's been because of the arts.
Well, I really think so. We bring down thousands of people each week. Many people don't quite grasp that. With a weekend full of performances, you know, our main theater seats 450. We have two auxiliary theater spaces that can seat 100 to 150, 200. We'll frequently have meetings and events and weddings. So every week, a couple thousand people are coming downtown. They've got to eat somewhere. They go to Maldener's, or maybe they go to Lukinen's or any of the other great restaurants downtown. Maybe they go out for a drink afterwards. So we have helped, without question, the economy of downtown by being there and bringing these people. Now, maybe we're not always there during the day when the shopkeepers would really like some customers to be there, but we're there at night, we're there on the weekends, and we bring life and energy to the downtown. I love the energy you get there in the afternoon when the kids are coming in for their afternoon rehearsals and classes, when the youth symphony is being dropped off for their rehearsals, when the ballet company is rehearsing. It is buzzing with activity, and there's a vitality there. And that was, you know, when I changed careers back in 2012, that was one of the things that really drew me, was the energy that was just so vibrant. And I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to help that continue and succeed and grow. And I think we've been able to do that. We're more financially stable. We paid off our mortgage in 2015. The great thing when it comes to donors, they know that this isn't anyone's fault. Sometimes when a company or a business goes and says, hey, we really need help, they say, well, how is it managed? How did you do this? Did you make good choices? I think everyone's in the same situation in this case. This is an act of God, and or however you want to phrase it, this is beyond all of our controls through no fault of anyone. And we're all just trying to make it through. One of the things I told my staff when we were going on hiatus and we were really concerned about paying our bills, I made the comment saying, well, you know, we're going to be at home. And I'm guessing the people who collect the bills are also going to be at home. So I think we're all going to have to be kind to one another during this period and have some grace, some forgiveness as we try to get through this and figure out how to survive. I mourn for the businesses that aren't surviving.
The collective is going to move out of the whole
thing. Right. That's heartbreaking to me, because I think what makes us unique is that we're not one thing. We're not just a theater. We're not just an art gallery. We're not just a ballet room. We're not just where the orchestra rehearses or performs. We have all the different art forms represented. We're the home of the Springfield Area Arts Council. Sheila Walk is just a brilliant administrator. She does a great job. The building just has so many different things going on. We understand the collective situation, and that is a concern that other groups might find themselves in a similar situation. And then I would be more concerned for our future, but I totally understand it. There's very little traffic right now downtown, and our building has been closed for a big portion of this time. So it's hard. It is hard, but we will miss them. We still have the Sangamon Watercolor Society that we just love having there as well. But it's the thing that makes us unique nationwide, I think, is that all these different art forms are there under one roof. And it is brilliant to watch these different groups collaborate. It's great fun to watch the Youth Symphony has a new name. They're the Illinois Symphony Youth Orchestras and Civic Orchestra. But to watch them work with the ballet company or to watch them work with the theater center, it's great to see that, to use a buzzword, synergy going on. And that's important to survive. The residents have been great. They have been wonderfully cooperative, helpful. Again, I remain optimistic. We've lasted this far. I think we're fine. I think we'll be fine to the early portion of next year. The real question is, we can make it till summer of next year. I think it's what happens after that. If we haven't gotten a handle on this as a nation, or as a world, and if it goes into 2022, then I don't know, because we will hit donor fatigue at some point.
There's elasticity to some extent, but how far can we stretch it till things start to snap, right?
Well, if you had asked me in March, could you last a year without your typical sources of income, I would have said, no way on earth. There's no way that could happen. But again, expenses are way down, and we've been exploring grants and donations. We've been exploring some online alternatives. None have been as successful as their in-person counterparts, but it's new. And maybe as people get more accustomed to it, maybe that will be accepted and those forms will grow. Even it's hard to take a class online. Every school kid in the area is learning that. Every teacher, every parent in the area knows how hard that is. We were concerned with our education program. Would kids want to get back online after being online all week to learn about singing and dancing and acting? And thankfully, many of them were interested in doing that. So we've been able to continue with some education courses online. So that's great that we still have that connection.
Tell me a little bit more about, I think the next on tap, like you said, is Dracula.
Right. We rehearsed on Zoom. We have, a lot of people in the cast. I did this in 2006, and I did it with you guys, with NPR Illinois. We recorded it at Sacred Heart Griffin High School, and then it was broadcast on Halloween night on NPR Illinois. And we decided when we were gonna do a radio show that this was an effective one. I thought the script was good. Dracula in all its forms has been done many, many different ways. The book is kind of unwieldy. It's very episodic and a lot of extraneous characters. The movie versions have been very different, the play version different. This radio adaptation takes some of the best elements of all those and puts it together in a very well-written script. We decided to give that a shot. We rehearsed via Zoom, which was not as challenging as it sounds. There's a little lag time, and some people's microphones are better than others. Some people's internet connections were better than others. We'd sometimes see someone freeze mid-line, but we got back together in person over the weekend, and we staged it. So it is it's a staged play, but it's staged as if it were a 1940s radio show. We have Mary Watts Myers, who's providing all the sound effects live, and some of the cast helps out with that. Don Stevens and Kayla Prim provided an original score to the show with lots of organ, music. So it's very atmospheric. And whenever Dracula appears, you hear dun dun. So that was a lot of fun to put together. When we're on stage, we wear our mask until we walk up to the microphone, then we take the mask off to speak. But again, we were spaced 7 feet apart with the mics. We all had wireless mics on, so we weren't sharing a common mic. So we were just pretending to talk into the period microphones. We really thought about every safe way we could do this. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the actors who haven't done anything in a very long time, with the Muni season being, had to be canceled and postponed, and Theater in the Park and STC and all these other groups that had the legacy, all these shows that were scheduled that had to close down, there has been not anything to do. So this was a lot of fun. And the actual taping went great. We're editing it right now, a very tight turnaround, so you have to get it ready for Thursday night. But then it'll broadcast, and people can enjoy it at home. We figured there would be a lot of Halloween events that wouldn't happen. You know, Springfield has a lot of great yearly Halloween events, and many of them, because of the social element, will not be happening. So we thought, well, maybe let's give an alternative for this year, something we can do in a safe way that we feel comfortable with, because a lot of the actors were my age, in 40s, 50s, so we're all being a little more cognizant, perhaps, than people who are in their teens or 20s, who might be able to get through COVID better than we would. And we did it in a very safe way that we felt comfortable with, and I think the audience will get a kick out of this.
If somebody wants to see it, what do they do again?
Well, it's on a company called ShowTix4U. Show, T-I-X, the number four, the letter U.com. You go there, you type in Hoagland Center of the Arts. This show will pop up, Dracula and Songs for a New World, which is on video on demand right now. That will also pop up. You click on it, you can buy your ticket. A single ticket for Dracula is $10. A family ticket is $15. Of course, we can't monitor that. We just hope people will understand that this is a fundraising event, and that they'll, if two or more or a whole group of people are watching, we hope that they will consider buying the $15 ticket. If they don't have that, they can buy the cheaper ticket, surely. You'll get an email with a link, and you just click on that link. The catch is two things. One, you need to log in. You can't log in more than an hour in advance of showtime. The 29th, the 30th, and 31st, we start at 7 o'clock. I mean, those early birds who like to get in their seats early, if you want to sit in front of your computer, you can do that starting at 6 o'clock. but the other catch is, just like in the theater, the show starts at 7, and it starts at the same time for everybody. So it's not like a video on demand that you can start whenever you want to and finish it wherever you want to. It starts at 7 and it finishes at 9 or 8:45. If you are 10 minutes late, you will have missed 10 minutes of it. So that's the only downside, but it kind of gives you the real theater experience, because you got to be there when it starts.
And I assume there'll also be a link if somebody went to your regular Hoagland Center for the Arts website.
Right. They can go to our website, hcfta.org, or our Facebook page, Hoagland Center for the Arts on Facebook. And there are links all over that take you to the ticketing software source. And it's really easy to do. We had so many people, even, you know, some of our more mature patrons who maybe aren't always up to date on the latest tech things. And they said, this was so easy. We just, you know, got the email, we clicked on it. Sometimes people had to check their spam folder to make sure the email, it came to them, but maybe if they didn't see it in their inbox, check your spam folder. It has gone there on a couple of occasions. Very easy to watch. You don't have to dress up. You can eat whatever you like. You can have your own adult beverage if you wish. Put your candy outside for the trick-or-treaters and enjoy something spooky indoors.
So we're so excited, Gus, much like War of the Worlds in the past and other radio plays you've done, you're going to make this available for us to air on the station.
Right. I think that's what makes this so cool, is after we've had our streaming performances, which is its own unique experience, to watch the musicians and the actors creating on stage, to watch the sound effects, which is fascinating, to watch how they creatively come up with ways to make a bat on stage, or how to make, you know, Dracula transform into a vapor. To watch how they do that is so much fun. But the whole idea is to recreate that era when radio was king, and the radio serial or the radio play or program, you had to use your imagination. So you guys have been great partners with us for that in the past. We've done A Christmas Carol, It's a Wonderful Life, War of the Worlds. We did Dracula back in 2006. And I think it's great fun to be able to sit at home and listen to it on the radio the way it was done originally. Yeah, no, we really appreciate you guys being willing to help us out with that. Your willingness to work together to make that happen. That's very cool.
Well, we've got a great cast, and stay tuned. We'll have more information about the time of the broadcast soon. Anything else coming up you'd like to mention before we wrap up?
I really appreciate the opportunity, Randy. We love you guys, and think you do great work at NPR Illinois.
Thank you.
You know, we're all just kind of muddling through this and trying to figure it out as we go along. You know, I second guess myself about every half hour about how we're doing things. But I think everyone's in kind of the same boat as far as that's concerned. But so far, so good. I am, as I like to tell people, I'm cautiously optimistic. This too shall pass, and the arts will be around when we're ready to come back out. I think in the Hoagland's case, I think we've become too important to the city as a whole and the economic resurgence of downtown to go away. If it really ever got dire, that we would figure out a way to make it through. And we're fortunate that at this particular moment, it's not dire, but that could change in a heartbeat. It's just the nature of what we do. And, you know, I say that to people during a normal time. You know, if we have a snowstorm and that knocks out the show for that weekend, we were depending on that ticket income to get us to January or whatever. Anything can happen. And if things get worse, God forbid, we'll deal with that. But I think people need to remain optimistic, have something to look forward to. And, you know, we all have to help one another right now and be supportive and keep each other safe and healthy. We all know what we should be doing, I think. I'm so sorry this has become a political thing. In some cases, I think it's just a care for your neighbor thing. I want to see my neighbors safe and happy after this is all said and done.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for what all your staff do there and all the volunteers. It's an incredible community of volunteer, non-paid theater folks for the most part. The Hoagland really gives them a great opportunity to showcase what they love to do. This is Gus Gordon, who we've been talking with on Community Voices. I'm Randy Eccles for NPR Illinois.